The British National Corpus is a collection of over 100 million words from samples of written and spoken English. But 90% of it is written down, and that limits what we can do with it. So, 2 years ago, a collaboration between Cambridge University Press and Lancaster University set about bringing the corpus into the 21st century. Emma Sackville heard how from Cambridge University Press's senior language research manager, Dr. Claire Denbury.
Typically when we recorded people's conversations in the past, you would have a massive tape recorder and you would put it on the table and press the button, and usually there'd be somebody else there.
Sort of like this.
Kind of like this. So that the conversation was typically a bit self-conscious. So what we did actually was ask people to make recordings on their smartphones or their tablet or whatever. They kind of became part of the conversation. People didn't really realise that they were being recorded. So what that's meant is that the recordings that we've gathered are really natural. So we've got all kinds of like really interesting topics.
So what have been some of the applications? What are you collecting this data for?
Yeah. So here at Cambridge University Press, we're really interested in language teaching. So we want to know that we're teaching learners the best stuff, the things that are the most useful. More widely though, the whole of the data set will be publicly available to any researcher. And there's so many, I think, really fascinating questions we can ask. Also, one thing that I think is really nice is that if someone had prompted you with a question, you know, how do you feel about the environment, you'd say, oh, I'm very concerned about the environment. But actually, because this is a kind of free, unprompted collection of language, what we can also see is the topics that people are interested in. So there's a kind of wider sort of social implication as well.
And what have been the main or sort of most surprising trends or differences in words?
So initially we had quite a light-hearted look at stuff. So we were interested in which words had kind of gone up in frequency, which words had gone down. So we found stuff like we talk about tea almost exactly the same amount as we used to before. Obviously it's a massive concern. We looked at the word love. And in the 90s we find that people love their family and their brothers and their mum. And in our recent collection, people love handbags and cheese.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah, but language changes, and really what we're saying there is that the word love is used differently. So really, that's a nice example that reflects how language has changed.
So even in 25 years, there's been a pretty big difference in how we use language. Which got me thinking, we would be able to recognise language from the 90s, even if we might cringe at the hair and the fashion. And forsooth, my dear friends, we can work out the words in A Merry Eve of Shakespeare. But if we went really far back, would we be able to understand English? And if it comes to it, where did language even come from in the first place?
My name is Mariana Bozic. I'm a university lecturer, and I do research in the field of aspects of language comprehension.
How do we process language in the brain?
So the current view is that there are two joint but functionally distinct networks. So one being bihemispheric networks, so both left and right hemispheres, that is a network for essentially basic comprehension, so mapping sound to meaning. And then on top of that, we have the left hemisphere network that seems to be dealing with specifically sort of grammatical aspects of that sentence.
And is it that grammar side of things that makes human distinct from animals? Because obviously all animals do sort of communicate.
Yes, that is one of the current ways of thinking about it. Human language allows us to express pretty much anything. We can express past and future and possibility, and that has not been observed in any other animal species.
So do we know when that ability evolved?
In short, no. There's been, there is lots of speculation on this. And one of the ideas is that it has something probably to do with tool usage, that the usage of complex tools would be something that would require complex thinking, allowing or triggering sort of language. And we know that in humans, there is a white matter tract that links frontal to temporal regions in the left hemisphere that is really relevant and necessary for language comprehension. And comparing the strength, consistency, really, of those white matter tracts in, say, humans versus chimps or macaques shows that this is much more prominent in humans.
If we were to go back in time, would we be able to understand the language that our ancestors were speaking?
I suppose it's a question of how far back you go. I was looking up for English, for instance. You would probably be able, you would be able to understand language from 1500 or so, but not language from 5th century. So languages are going to evolve and develop over time. There are going to be different influences that are feeding in and then shaping how a particular language ends up looking. Well, I mean, it's a continuous process of development, obviously. But I think in the case of English language, you would not be able to understand Old English, so what's been spoken in 7th century.
So some words might come and go, and we might never find out exactly how language started. But there's one thing we know for certain. The British will always be talking about tea.
Emma Sackville there, speaking with Mirjana Bosic, and before her, Claire Denbury.